Welcome to the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today, we're going to go back to the roots about this podcast and just talk about different ways to actually build your audience. And what we're going to do is we're going to start out a little general in this episode, and then we're going to get more specific in later episodes. So, Tony, what are different ways to build your audience?
Well, can we talk first about how not everyone is your audience?
Yes. Actually, it's important. This is an important concept, actually.
It is, and it's one that I think you and I actually talked about a couple years ago at a conference. I don't know if you remember this, but we heard a Donald Miller talk.
Yes.
I don't know what event we were at. And he was talking about how you need to hone in on your people with your message as opposed to being sort of all over the place. And that was something that really stuck with me at that event. And because I'm a people pleaser, so I tend to want to make everybody happy. But I really thought about that after we heard his talk. And I thought, you know, I really just need to focus on my people as opposed to trying to be everything to all people.
Actually, that was a lesson that took me a long time to learn with my blog. Because in the beginning, I was just trying to write to please everybody. I never took really a strong stance on anything. Because in my mind, I was thinking to myself, hey, if I can appeal to a broad base of people, then that means more traffic because more people will be willing to read it. But it's actually the opposite.
Right, because you basically, nobody's really that interested because you're too plain.
Right. You're middle of the road when you go in that space. So you actually have to take a stand one side of the fence or the other. And it's kind of just one of those counterintuitive things that you'll pick up when it comes to building an audience.
Yeah. So I think the very first rule that people need to remember is that not everybody is your audience, and it's okay for that to be the case.
Yes. And it's also to go as narrow as possible.
Yeah. That's tough too. I have a very broad website though. So.
Well, no, you can start out narrow and then gradually expand as opposed to going broad at first and then narrowing it down. I think it works better the other way around.
Right. Well, and I also think, too, something that people don't think about that often when it comes to growing your audience is you want to grow the right audience because eventually you need your audience to take action on something. I mean, the whole point in building an audience is to make money. And so you need those people to either buy from your affiliate link, buy a physical product, buy a digital product, click around on an ad. And if their people that are coming to your website are not your people, then they're not going to buy from you. They're not going to stay on your website, which is going to hurt you overall. It's also going to cost you more money because you're paying for email subscribers that aren't paying attention. You're paying for traffic that you're probably paying more in hosting for, and it's not converting for you.
Here's one thing that I've always wondered, and I always think this is a mistake, but there are these people who write about getting out of debt, but then when it comes to monetizing that, I don't see any avenues for monetization.
Yeah, that's so funny because I had this conversation right before the shutdown, actually, with a good friend of ours that has a get out of debt website. And I said, it's very hard to get people to pay money to get out of debt. It's very easy to get people to pay money to make money.
Right. And also, I always think about the people who target frugality people or frugal people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those people are inherently cheap, so they're going to be less likely to want to spend a lot of money.
Yeah, so your avenues are really affiliates and display advertising for the most part in those. So it's much tougher to take that perspective because frugal people just don't like to spend money and they complain about it too.
Right. You know, this is really funny because when we were starting our online store with my kids, it's called kidincharge.com. They sell entrepreneurship t-shirts. What's funny is that in the beginning, they were designing their t-shirts targeting kids, right?
Okay.
But what was funny, so they designed like t-shirts with like unicorns on it and that sort of thing. And what was funny was that they didn't actually start making more sales until they started changing around the language on their t-shirts targeting parents because parents are the ones that have the money. So if you're a parent and you're shopping for a t-shirt for your kid, you want it to say something that you want your kid to become as opposed to buying them like a unicorn t-shirt.
Oh, okay. That, right? I mean, that makes total sense, but yeah.
So for example, like Girl Boss is a lot more appealing than, you know, just some random t-shirt for a
unicorn
kid.
Sparkly boss.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Parents don't want to buy that t-shirt.
Yeah. It's actually a realization that my daughter came to, like when we were all talking about how to design these shirts for her entrepreneurship fair. Some other things like lessons there, like we ended up making shirts, entrepreneurship shirts with the school's name on it, right? So the parents would actually want to buy that for their kids also.
That's actually really interesting. So So thinking about that, knowing that not everybody is your audience, you have to know who your audience is. And this is a lesson that you actually gave in Profitable Audience, or we gave it together about a year ago, about knowing your message of your website, your podcast, your YouTube channel. Do you remember this when you did that lesson?
Vaguely. Like, we do a lot of lessons, Tony.
Yeah, I know, we do. Yeah. So, but we talked about it's important to know your message, because if you understand what your message is, then it can come through in everything that you create, and therefore you're going to continue to push that message to the right people. So I know for you, your message on My Wife Quit Her Job is the importance of family. Like the whole reason, like there's a lot of people that write about entrepreneurship, but a lot of people that write about entrepreneurship write about the hustle.
Yes.
And they talk about, you know, 80-hour work weeks and doing as much as you can and the grind. And you actually took a really different approach with My Wife Quit Her Job. And so your message appeals to a different group of people.
I think it's important when you're building an audience to have some sort of backstory, right?
Yeah.
I mean, your backstory is extremely appealing. It was one of the reasons I got sucked in. So let me just tell you, in case you've ever, if you guys have never been to Tony's blog, she has this, I want to say it's like 20 pages. It's like a 20-page story about her life, which is fascinating. And then at the end, she doesn't tell you the ending. She makes you sign up for her email list to get the conclusion. By the way, you guys, we'll link this up in the show notes, because it's like Tony has had a ridiculous life, let's just say.
Yeah. The ending is actually coming now.
Is it really? I didn't know you were working on it. Okay.
Yes, it is. It's on my, I showed, before we recorded this, I showed Steve my 3-page list of things that I would like to get done in the next 10 days, which might be a little aggressive, but yeah, that's actually on the list of what's
interesting.
Getting
done. So finally, after what, 7 years?
Of knowing 7 years, you can figure out, you know how it ends now.
I mean, all I've been getting is like blueberry muffin recipes, right. And finally I get the conclusion.
That's right. But I think that's important to have some sort of message or backstory, because as we talk about all the time, there's millions of websites and podcasts and YouTube channels, and there has to be something about yours that makes you relatable to the right people.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people come up to us and say, hey, I don't really have an interesting backstory. And that's kind of BS. Everyone has their own unique story to be told. And I think if you bring it up to the light, like if you emphasize your story, people will remember that about you as opposed to like the accomplishment. So for example, like when I first started my blog, I thought that what would hook people in was the fact that I made $100,000 in profit in our first year. But no, that's actually not what attracts people. What attracts people is the fact that I can spend all this time with the family, and that's my primary focus.
And I think this is an interesting exercise for people, because we get this all the time on our coaching calls where people say, oh, I don't think I have an interesting story. And then 3 minutes later, they're telling us how they grew up on a commune and lived in a tiny home and had no electricity. There's like some really random, because what happens is when you grow up or you have experiences, they become normalized to you. So you don't think that they're special.
Right.
Sometimes. And so I think it's important, if you're struggling and if you think, oh, I don't have a special message or a special story, that just talk it out with people. And I guarantee you within 10 minutes, people that you're talking to will hone in on whatever that is.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's really hard to build an audience unless you have some sort of hook or something interesting about you that you expose to the world.
Okay, so that's, I would say, rule number one is, you know, focus on the audience. Actually, it's rule number one, too. And then create a message, create your message, your story, whatever that is. Obviously, it's got to be true. And then I think after that, after you've sort of figured those two things out, you want to start working on basically getting eyeballs, getting views, getting listeners, whatever it is. And, you know, we talk about, there's a bunch of different ways to do that. SEO, Pinterest, email, social. And we're just going to, I think, do an overview today and then focus on each one in a separate episode. Do you want to kick it off with SEO? Because I know that's your favorite.
It's not my favorite per se, because it's a lot of work. However, what I like about SEO is that you can write one piece of content, get it ranked in search. SEO stands for search engine optimization, by the way. Get it ranked in search and you'll get traffic to that post for years. So because I'm kind of like a lazy guy, I prefer to like do one thing really well and then just have like the fruits of that labor last a long time, as opposed to something that if you do all the time, like social media. That's one of the things that I don't like about social media. You have to be constantly posting. It's like running on a hamster wheel.
I totally agree with you. And I, not to get ahead of ourselves here, but yep. I think something to keep in the back of your mind is we're going to go over these, but you really just need to focus on one of them when you're getting started. I would not try to focus on everything. I think one of the mistakes people make is that they think they can do everything at once. And when you're trying to build something from zero, it's hard to do all those things well. And so you'll end up doing none of them well, and you won't see. We see this all the time, too, where people say, hey, I got my website up, or I started my YouTube channel and I don't have a lot of subscribers and I'm not getting any email signups. And you go look at it and you're like, well, you only have two posts. Like, you've got to work on your content and you're creating content, and then just focus on one channel to gain an audience. You can't do all of them right away.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the downside to SEO, and this is one thing that I'm always struggling with, is that when you go the SEO route, in a way you are writing what Google wants you to write about.
Right.
And it's based on what other people are searching for, which might not necessarily conform to what you actually want to write about. So while the traffic is free and it's plentiful, it might affect your creativity a little bit. And that's kind of what happened to me in the past. Like, these days when I want to write about something, I'll look to see what people are searching for and kind of wedge it in there somehow. I know it doesn't sound good, but yeah.
Well, I think another thing that you've done, I don't know if you've always done this, but I feel like in the past couple of years you've done this well, is that you have, it's very obvious to me when you have an SEO play post, but you also add other content and other videos that are less about SEO and more about probably what your audience is interested in a little bit more. The people that are coming back and reading you every single week. And so you mix them together. So you might have a really SEO heavy post, but then the next week you might have something that's, I call them fluff pieces, but I know you don't love that word, but.
Well, no, that's what I call them. I mean, they are okay. Fluff pieces.
Yeah.
So yeah, or I combine the two.
A fluffy SEO post?
Well, the thing about this is in this day and age, like, every company and every person is writing for SEO. Right?
Right.
And so what you end up doing is a lot of these companies, they're just hiring like writers everywhere that are just kind of regurgitating whatever's out there and trying to make the longest posts out there. Right. And then after a while, it just becomes a sea of junk. It's kind of like what Amazon.com is right now for like generic products.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's just slapping on their label and publishing it. And that's kind of what's happening in SEO now. And so to make yourself stand out, you really have to incorporate some of your own experiences and some of your own backstory into those posts to give it a little bit of extra color. And that way people will follow you.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why the understanding your own message is important, because then it can, I mean, in almost every post that you write, you do have the angle of wanting to spend more time with your family and having a life balance that's reasonable.
I mean, here's something that I'm trying to teach my kids, and it's been really hard, especially since they're in junior high now, where trying to fit in is very important. Mm-hmm. But being weird is actually a really good thing. Like, if you can stand out, it's funny. Like, you go through school and they, you know, you try to fit in and you don't even realize until you're like 30. Like, it took me many years to realize that just being weird and standing out is actually what puts you at an advantage, especially in the content world.
Isn't that so funny? Because I feel like your whole life you're just taught to fit in.
I don't know if you're taught to fit in, but for some reason that's what ends up happening, right? You don't want to stand out because you don't want to get teased or anything like that.
Okay, we're going to go on a huge tangent here, but think about this first. What? The homeschooler in me is about to come out. Okay, think about this though. Think about elementary school, right? And a typical elementary school experience. And this is where I think boys are at such a huge disadvantage in the younger grades too, is that what are you taught to do in elementary school? Sit still, be quiet, don't talk to your neighbor, don't be different, don't be loud. You know, they give you pictures to color, and who gets praised? The people that color in the lines, the people that follow all the directions. If you do something totally off, you're not getting a gold star for that. You're told, oh, well, that's okay, but like, color in the lines, do this, trace the dots. All that stuff is teaching you to conform from the fact, from your time you're 3 years old.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I grew up, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's this message that's constantly pushed into your brain, and not by saying like sit down and conform, but follow the directions, do exactly what you're told, get in line, stay in line, sit here, do that. And so your whole life from the time you're a little kid, you're taught to just follow directions as opposed to thinking outside the box, which is, I mean, I know there are some schools out there that do a good job of this, but like, the reality is, in like a classroom management setting, when you have 25 kids, you can't have 25 kids that all want to be independent firecrackers.
Right. Right.
So it's sort of that whole, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I homeschooled my kids is because I wanted them to be different and not have to conform. Although now I have a bunch of rebels, so I'm not sure if that worked out in my favor.
I'm sure there's probably a balance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our kids are actually rule followers, and I've been trying to get them to just do other things. But yeah, I mean, that's a different episode in itself. But bottom line, no one builds an audience just being normal.
Yep.
Right?
Be weird.
Just think about it. Every person that you follow online, they've taken some sort of strong stance, or they're unique in a certain way, or they stand out in some way. They don't conform with the crowd.
Yeah, that's so true. It's and actually, that's a great... We're totally all over the map here today, but that's a great way to use social media as far as like growing your audience, is I think social media is a place where you can show off your weirdness.
Yes. And there's just so many stories. Like, there's so many stories I haven't told yet.
Yay.
Which will come out. So I was just telling Tony prior to recording this that I'm starting a TikTok channel, and I was just telling her that it's a lot more fun than YouTube or Instagram, because you can be goofy. Like, it's an excuse to be goofy on TikTok, because not everything is serious there.
Yeah. And I think that is where, so we talked about SEO a little bit. I think social media, it's definitely a way to grow your audience. But I think the thing that you have to think about on social media is the importance of social media is, one, to use it to connect with people. So it is a place where it's easier to respond, have conversations with people. People leave comments, you need to respond to those comments, things like that. But it's also a really good way to showcase your personality, because if you think, so YouTube is huge. You're doing YouTube right now. You're having a lot of success. Not everybody, I think, has the ability or the drive to like dedicate the amount of time it takes to make great videos on YouTube. But I think everybody can do 15 to 30 second videos on social media, just clips, little things. That doesn't take any time. You can do it with your phone. You don't need to get any sort of like editing equipment. You can do it all within a couple apps. And I think if you want to use social media to grow your audience, that is where you get to showcase whatever component of your personality or your message that is going to make you special. That's where you can do it really well.
I mean, I think it, again, comes down to two choices, right? Like YouTube, I consider, like, I have videos that I produced like years ago that still get views every single day. YouTube and SEO in general are places where if you put out one really good piece of content that's polished, it actually doesn't even have to be edited well, but it's a good piece of content. That one piece of content that you focus on can generate traffic for a long time. Mm-hmm. Whereas with social, you're right. It's so easy. You just pick up your phone, you film some 15-second clip, which is what I've been doing. And you can get traffic, but you have to be very consistent with it. In fact, I was just talking with a TikTok expert the other day, and she was saying you need to post 4 to 8 times a day in order to just kind of maintain that consistency. So it's a trade-off. Do you want to go with something that you need to do on a regular basis to build your audience? Or would you rather put out infrequently a solid piece of content that generates traffic on its own?
I agree. And I think that's why I think that social media can be hard for people, because if you tell someone who's brand new that they have to make 4 to 8 pieces of content a day for TikTok, and I know Instagram's pretty similar, you need to be putting out like daily content. That's just... immediately you throw in the towel, because you're thinking, I'm already having trouble just making one video a week or creating one piece of content a week. But I think for some people, social media is their jam. Like, that is where they thrive. And I think if you're an extrovert, if you have no problem picking up a camera, then it's probably easier for you to create 4 pieces of content a day for TikTok or Instagram than it is for you to sit down and write 3,000 words.
So you know what, since we're talking about this, my frame of mind has completely changed in just the past month on this. So for example, when I write a blog post, it usually takes between 4 to 6 hours to do so. Mm-hmm. Like a solid writing that's concentrating, where I'm concentrating fully on it. Whereas I can probably take that 4 hours and put out like 3 months worth of social media content in one sitting.
I mean, that's true.
Right? So it's just a different frame of mind. Like, if you think about like, oh, I got to post 4 to 8 times a day, then that sounds intimidating. But the amount of time that you're spending on something else, and if you just batch everything, it's actually a lot less intimidating. And that's kind of how I've gotten over my social media hatred, I should say.
And for me, I have a different approach to social media. And it partly is because of what I write about. You obviously write about business, so it's a little bit more difficult. But I just have decided I'm just documenting everything I do throughout the day. So I'm always in the back of my mind thinking, take a picture, take a video. And so for me, I'm able to just push social media out all day long only because it's just part of my day. It's, you know, whatever I'm making for dinner, whatever I'm doing, if I'm running to the store, if I'm putting together a piece of furniture, that's easy to just document and put out there. So for me, it's more about remembering to do it. So because it's easy just to get distracted and you're just trying to get something done. But I think if you have a website or any type of content that you're putting out there that's really about, I guess it's more of a lifestyle site or food or travel. Like if you have a travel, just all you need to do is just document everything you're doing, just clips all day long. And
yeah,
I think it makes it easy.
That definitely works for you. I couldn't do that because whenever I bust out my phone to like take a picture or film something, like my kids immediately start hiding. and then my wife is like, hey, don't point that at me. Do not point that at me.
You're like, here I am in front of my computer. Here I am in front of my computer again. Here I am in front of my computer, different
Here's
angle.
Here's me typing. Yeah. I mean, that's what my life is. It's sad, but yeah.
But I think, like, let's talk about e-commerce because that's another business that you have. There's a lot about e-commerce, especially if you have a brand and you are involved in the day-to-day with that brand. There's a lot of content you can put out about your brand that's sort of like behind the scenes that your audience would absolutely love to see, you know, for you. Handkerchiefs being embroidered, things getting packed and shipped. It's amazing to me how audiences love watching any behind the scenes, even if it's boring.
You know, it's funny you say that because I want to say a couple of years ago, just randomly, I picked up my phone and I just filmed a tour of my warehouse. I mean, it's nothing special. It's just a bunch of things in boxes and a bunch of desks. But that video actually got a lot of views.
Yeah.
And you
people love the backstory.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that people would be interested in seeing yet another office, right?
Yeah.
But people are just genuinely interested in what you do. So that's always surprised me.
Yeah. So I think if you are interested in doing social media to help build your audience, thinking about which way works for your brand. So I think there's the batch method, which I think is actually the only way you can do it well. If when you have other things going on. But I think the other side of it is to just, if you have a business where you can take snapshots of your day, that actually is pretty easy to do too.
You don't even need to have a business. Like, so for example, there are these doctors and dentists, they just start documenting the different cases that they have. And it's fascinating to people who aren't doctors, right?
Oh, I watch this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Like I'm addicted.
I mean, I even started watching Dr. Pimple Popper occasionally.
Oh,
right?
I can't watch that. I get so grossed
out. I don't know
out.
Why it's so satisfying to see one of those babies pop. But
oh my gosh. I've started following. So there's a, and I started following him because my sister babysat this kid growing up, but now he's a PhD like research biologist or something. And he just makes these little videos about the lab and genes and stuff with the microscope. And you know, I'm not into that, but I'm so fascinated by the videos because he gives you like 30 seconds about, well, this is the disease process for XYZ. And it's him talking in like a couple videos at the lab. And I watch all of his content on Instagram and TikTok. I'm completely fascinated by it.
Yeah. So even if you think your job is mundane and boring, it probably isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So social media. The next one I want to talk about is Pinterest.
Okay.
Which
this one's all
I would
you.
Say. Yeah. Hey, I got some stuff going for you today, this morning.
Oh, you do? Sweet.
I do. So Pinterest, I would say if you are new to the content world, you can think about Pinterest like you can think about Google, except for it's more image-based than Google. Google, I think, is still, I don't know, it still feels like it's text-based.
It's all text-based, yeah.
I know they have Google image search and things like that, but Pinterest is basically that visual search engine. And it works, what I love about it is that it works very similar to Google in that you can create that one piece of content, you can create the one pin, and it lasts forever. Some of my most trafficked posts are from pins that are 4 and 5 years old. And I just think it's a great way to do something. It's the set it and forget it model, just like Google or an SEO. And I think you don't have to be a graphic designer. You can use something like Canva or PicMonkey to make the images. They've made it really easy for you. And the longer Pinterest is around, the more data they're giving all of us about how their algorithm works. I think initially nobody had any idea and there were a bunch of different strategies going around. Now they basically come out with an SEO like toolkit for people and how to basically SEO your posts on Pinterest. And I think that's been helpful. It's still new. Like, I think we're still testing all that stuff out. But I think at the end of the day, it's one of those things where you can do something once or twice and see the results for a long time versus the social media daily component.
Yeah. You know, for some reason, I tried to force myself to get into Pinterest prior to having you do everything. And I just couldn't get myself to do it. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because there's this mental block that I still think Pinterest is for women, when it's not true. There's a lot of men on there now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just don't use it in regular life. Maybe that's why I couldn't get into it. Whereas you use it for your stuff, right?
Like I do use it. I use it all the time. And it's funny. So for me, as a user, I will go on Pinterest to search for something before I go on Google. So
that's fascinating to me. So does that work well?
Well, you know, what's funny is that so I have these like buckets. So if I want to know how to do something, if I want to know how to change a faucet in my house, or if I want to know how to fix something in Shopify, I go on YouTube and I search there. If I want a recipe, if I want a hair idea, an outfit idea, a DIY idea, I go on Pinterest every single time. And the only time I use Google is if I want to check out reviews, or if I want to travel. So if I want to go somewhere, I'll just say I'm going to Turks and Caicos and I want to look at hotels, I will Google the hotels, right? Because I want to read the Google reviews and probably the Yelp reviews, or not Yelp, TripAdvisor reviews. But the only time I use Google is if I want something that's review based.
Huh. It sounds like you're using Pinterest just for ideas.
Well, like if I want to make a recipe, like if I want to know how to make, like I have beef tips in my freezer right now and I want to find a crock pot recipe, I will look on Pinterest before I look anywhere else.
Not even YouTube for like a video?
No, because I don't really need a video for that. And I feel like, well, with Pinterest too, they show you, people can rate and review on Pinterest now and leave comments. So I think for me, anything DIY, recipe, parenting stuff, like all that stuff, I'll search Pinterest.
Let me ask you this. Is there a certain type of content that generally works better for building an audience on Pinterest than others? So everything you mentioned so far is lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
Can someone in business succeed?
I think so, because the other day I was searching for media kits. So I'm doing a lesson this week on media kits and I wanted to get some examples for our class. And I went to Pinterest to search. And the amount of results that came back it was almost too much. It was almost too much for me to weed through.
Huh. Interesting. Maybe I'll try it. Like maybe if I come to use it, maybe I'll be more inclined to actually promote on it.
Yeah. And I would say, just thinking about what wouldn't do, I mean, I think anything has the potential to do well on Pinterest, but like something that I always look for on YouTube is Shopify tutorials or WordPress tutorials. If I want to know how to do something with a plugin or something's not working, I'll usually go to the knowledge base of the tool first. But if I can't find it, I always go to YouTube. I probably would not be looking on Pinterest for that. And I've not seen a lot of that stuff on Pinterest. It doesn't mean it's not there, because I'm also not looking.
Right.
And now that Pinterest allows video pins, you know, who knows, right? That might be something that happens there as well. But I think it's way too soon to tell.
Interesting. What else you got on your list?
So the other thing on my list that I think is I hate ranking these things, but I think
it's funny. I love ranking things.
I know. You're like top five. Give me your top five. Okay, this is important though, because it doesn't really matter if you're driving traffic to your website or you're building this audience if they never come back. So I think before you do any of this stuff, you have to have your email set up.
Yes, yes. Actually, what is the definition of audience? I mean, it's your ability to, it's a group of people that are interested in what you have to say and come back for more. I don't know what the official definition is, but that's my definition.
Right. To me, an audience is someone that isn't just landing on your site once and never thinking of you again.
Right. It's someone who follows you and who might be like a super fan or a fan.
Right. I would say even just casual fan, but you have to hook them in some way. So whether they're going to follow you on Pinterest, like you on Facebook, follow you on Instagram, all those things, I would say that becomes your audience. But I think the best way for you to own those people is to have their email. Or I guess nowadays also SMS.
SMS. Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah. I'm probably going to be publishing a post on this, but I just use SMS for my last challenge and it worked so much better than email and Messenger in the past, because everyone gets their SMS.
Yes.
Right?
Well, SMS is text. If people don't know what that means. Yeah.
Yeah. But the point is that how many times have you ever gone on Google, found an article and you got great information out of it, but then you forgot what the website was altogether like 5 minutes later.
Okay, perfect example of this. I make beef tips like twice a month. And twice a month, I search for this one recipe that I can never remember the website. I just need to subscribe. Like, I just need to get on the email list because then I can at least remember.
Right.
But this is exactly what happens to me. And I've been looking up this recipe for over a year. And I still, and I always like, I need that one lady. It's something like Katie in the Kitchen. I don't, but I cannot remember the site. So every time I search it until I scroll down and look for the familiar photo and go, yeah.
Here's a geekier example of that. There's this Unix time calculator that I use all the time. Same one each time. I have to Google it each time.
Yeah. Well, and then if they drop in the rankings or something or they move, you're like, yes, no, she exactly. was number That's three. Happened. She was number three before.
In the last Google update, I couldn't find my stupid Unix time calculator anymore.
So, yeah. Anyway, all that to say that you have to have a way to capture those people that find you either randomly through search, coming over because someone shared something on social media, whatever it is, that's probably the most important thing and the thing that most people don't think about initially. They're just excited to get going.
Yeah, and if you think about audience building, like building a relationship, like I know everyone uses that word, but to me a relationship is where there's like a connection between the people. You can't establish a connection with just one interaction. It takes repeated interaction for years sometimes. And just to give you an example, just the other day, because I gave this challenge, someone signed up for my course after 5 years of following me. It took 5 years for this person to actually want to join my class.
You wore them down.
I did, yeah. And she's like, I've been on your email list for 5 years, and I've been hesitant to sign up. And finally I did it after all these years. I was like, damn, I got to work on something here.
If that was me though, I would think I could have paid half 5 years ago for the same information.
I mean, I was thinking to myself, man, I got to work on this, right? If it takes 5 years to wear someone down, that's not a good thing. But
no, yeah. I mean, if you took that into a relationship, they'd have moved on.
I know, like, seriously.
No ring after 5 years, I'm out. But yeah, so, but I think the important thing to remember, though, is that she stayed on your list for 5 years.
That's true.
So you were continually, over those years, engaging with her, sending her content, letting her get to know you, building that trust factor. So eventually she did buy from you. Obviously, the five-year model is probably not going to be profitable.
No, but what's funny about this is we actually had a consult, right? Because I give those away occasionally.
Yeah.
And she, like, knew everything about me. Like, even, like, back in the early days, I'm like, oh, my God.
So, that's actually hilarious. Yeah. And she knew everything about you and still signed up.
Exactly. Yes.
That's the problem. But yeah, so I think you have to have a way to capture people once they hit your website, because that's the truest way to build the audience is to get people to come back.
Yeah. I think email is like low hanging fruit. Like everyone should be doing email today.
Yeah.
SMS I think should be number two actually.
Okay. Yep.
And then after that, I guess there's Facebook Messenger and just like pixeling your audience.
You're down. You're so down on Messenger.
I'm a little
right
down
now.
On Messenger. What's interesting is though I'm having a Messenger person coming on the podcast in a couple okay. weeks, because I'm going to confront this person on all these things that have been happening to me. And just I want
dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
Stay tuned.
Yes.
Okay. So those are sort of ways to drive traffic to your channels. But I think another couple things we need to talk about are just some important habits that you need to get into. And we've talked about this a little bit, but I think consistency is huge in building an audience. You have to be putting out content on a regular basis, whatever that schedule is. And I know we've talked about in other podcasts where when you got started, you thought you had to put out content every day. That lasted a month. And then you went down to, did you go immediately to once a week? I think.
I went down. No, it was a little bit more gradual than that. But I was a little burned out. I think I went down to twice a week and then mm-hmm. once a week when I noticed there was no difference, actually.
Right. Like people do not want to hear that from me that much. But I think it's important to have a consistent schedule. And we see this all the time with people that will put out a lot of content or they'll make a bunch of videos, right? And then they don't make any videos for 6 months. And the reality is that your audience is just not going to stick with you if you are not reliable.
Not only that, I actually think Google rewards consistency. Okay. Like, for example, YouTube, like if you just post like, let's say you have 100 videos in the bank if you post all 100 back to back, you're not going to get any love. Whereas if you post one of those videos once a week, you'll get a lot more love in the long run.
Yeah. So I think that's really important. One way to do that, easily is the wrong word. One thing that will help you is to have something like an editorial calendar where you have a list, like you did this, where you came up with a list of things that you wanted to do on social media or a list of content ideas. And then you basically just created content about those. So the same thing with an editorial calendar can work for podcasting. I mean, we have a list of podcast topics. I'm sure you have a list of YouTube videos that you're going to make.
Yep.
And that way, because I think sometimes people end up with like writer's block, basically, where it's not that they don't want to create something, they just can't think of anything to create. So I think if you work from a list, even if it's not super organized, that's going to help you be consistent with what you're creating.
I think what's really helped me is a scheduler, something that just auto posts for you. So you just shove everything. So what you do is you set a calendar, like I want to post on this day at this time. And then you have all this content and you just hit, you know, add to the bucket, and it automatically schedules it out. That's been a lifesaver for me.
Okay. I'm not a huge scheduler, but I do think it works.
Yeah. Well, so how do you do it then? So you have this editorial calendar, but then you actually have to physically hit publish, right?
I do. I physically hit publish.
And
but that's usually because I'm running behind. I'm sure if I wasn't running behind, I would.
But you have to remember to hit publish, right? Like, have you ever forgotten?
I do. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. But I usually remember later in the day or the next day.
But you don't batch either for the most part, right?
I don't batch only because the type of content that I'm creating usually involves me making something or so I can't batch. Like, I can batch food, but I can't batch DIY.
Oh.
Things like that. You know what I mean? It's hard. It's
I guess
harder
you could.
To batch.
It's just not the way you operate, right? Like, if you did like 50 DIY projects in a row, I mean.
You want to sit there with glue for 10 days? How much glitter can I handle? Because typically, like, if I'm going to do a DIY project, it's going to take me, because if I didn't have to film or take photos, it would take me probably an afternoon. But with filming or taking photos and just making sure things, because when you're doing it without worrying about that, the setup's very different. When you're doing it when you want photos, it's like, well, I don't really want that rusty toy in the backyard behind whatever it is, you know, so you have to be a little more cognizant of things. Right. And like the last time I did a DIY in my backyard, I didn't realize we had like an anthill that I was standing in for like half. So my feet kept itching and I couldn't figure out why. And then halfway through, I realized I had like 5 ant bites on my toes. You know, it was like this whole big drama. I was like, I had to move everything, all this stuff. But so yeah, DIY is a little bit harder to batch. But you can also take that content and do a lot of repurposing with it. So you get, I think, more content out of it. So it's okay that's how it works. But yeah, I think if you can batch, that's so effective. In fact, I was just reading an article by, I think it was Eric Sue. And he talked about how they batch record like almost everything that they're doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, their marketing show podcast is like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So they're just batch.
So they do like,
yeah.
They do 20 at a time, I think I read.
Yeah.
And actually, I have a quote from him that I want to read at the end that I thought was pretty good. So I think but having that consistency and however that works for you to get consistent is what you need to do. And I know for you, it's batching. For me, it's just being stressed out. I think. But
well,
I do
you have a schedule.
I do have
it's different.
I do have an editorial calendar where I know what I want to talk about. I just don't batch it. The other thing that I think is really, really important is that you have to write about what you know. We get a lot of people who tell us they want to write about making money online who don't make money online. And I feel like if you are not genuine, and it doesn't mean you can't write about learning, but I think you have to know something about what you're doing for people to connect with you. You can't write about something in the theoretical, especially if it's about generating income.
I mean, I can, because I sort through all these business articles all the time, I can tell instantly when someone has no idea what they're talking about in that post. And it will come across. So if you write about something about making money and you're not doing it, it'll be very obvious to the person who reads it.
Yeah. So I think, I was just thinking about when you were talking about that, I was thinking like, can you imagine like making, like writing a recipe but not making it?
And, you know, I always wondered if people do that because the end photos just look too good. Are those
stock
photos?
Well, I mean, sometimes they are, but I think the amount of work that goes into like taking those photos is hours. It's insane. So, I don't know. Okay, I want to read this quote because I think this is a good place to sort of, we can wrap up and end. But I want to read this quote from Eric. Let me find it really quick. Oh, no, I want to talk about one more thing before, and then I'll talk about this. Another way to build an audience, and this is probably its own podcast in itself as well, is to collaborate with other people in your space or basically guest post or guest, I don't know what it is when you're on a podcast. What is that called?
It's just called having them on as a guest and maybe exchanging podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think when you're first getting started, it's really hard to build an audience. It's just hard when you don't have anything and you don't have an audience at all. But I think if you can connect with other people, that's actually a really helpful way to grow your audience and get out in front of people.
I mean, I think that's like the best way. If you can meet other content creators, and oftentimes even if you don't have an audience, but you become good friends with another content creator, they'll probably be willing to do something with you.
Well, yeah, and even if you both are smaller, you're going to benefit from each other's audiences.
I mean, if you think about it, this is how a lot of people grow in this space, right? If you remember JD used to collaborate with a bunch of personal finance bloggers, and they all kind of basically started promoting each other's content. And that's kind of how they got big early on, right?
Yeah.
And similarly, I work with a bunch of e-commerce writers too.
Well, and you're part of a couple masterminds where I think at times you guys can share each other's content and work together on things. And I think all of that is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And for me, like personally, that's how I grew my site in the very beginning, was working with other bloggers and becoming friends with other content creators and doing guest posting, collaborations, sharing, having them link to me, not me asking for it, but just because we had a friendship and it was relevant, that happened pretty organically.
Yeah, definitely. I remember you used to have these groups, right? That you would get.
Yes, I did. I had little
roundup
groups
and everything, right?
Yeah. And that still works today. It's still something that's going on, especially on Facebook. They're usually in Facebook and you just drop links in and people just share them. Because everyone's looking for content to share and link to anyway. So
yeah, and this occurs on any medium. Like YouTube, there's collabs where people bring other people in and then promote each other's channel. Same with Instagram also. Like share for share. It happens everywhere.
So I think we've covered everything in an overview, unless I'm missing something. Do you have anything else to add?
I don't. I'm looking forward to getting more specific on all of these, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Because each one of these, there's a lot of strategies within them that you can use to grow quicker or get the right people. And I think the most important thing, I think if you're going to take away anything from this podcast, is that you have to be true to who you are and your message. You can't try to be like somebody else. You have to be weird. You have to be the freak. You have to be different. And this is why I love this quote from Eric Sue of Single Grain. Am I saying
this? Yep, Single Grain. Yep.
He says, forget the audience thing. Building the audience is almost like a side effect. Your audience starts to form once you start to form a point of view. You don't form a point of view until you start to talk about it, until you start to develop your own voice. And I think that's so true, because you've got to be you. You've got to have your message, your point of view, in order to get other people to want to follow you.
And I think just being you will cause people to want to follow you. Like, you might not think you're special, but there's something about your personality. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.